All right, the first case for argument today is Banks versus Barnhart, 02-33-39. Mr. Schultz.
Good morning, Your Honors. Barry Schultz on behalf of the plaintiff, William Banks. The decision of the administrative law judge in Mr. Banks' claim for disability benefits include several errors which require reversal. The ALJ failed to make a proper credibility determination in this case. He found that, quote, the claimant's allegations of inability to work were not credible because of significant inconsistencies in the record as a whole, close quote. There's no further discussion of credibility in the ALJ's decision. According to the Social Security ruling 96-7P, and this court's holdings in Zarowski versus Halter and Steele versus Barnhart, a conclusory statement concerning a claimant's credibility is insufficient. ALJ's credibility determination must include specific findings and must relate to the specific testimony in the record. The ALJ does not discuss Mr. Banks' testimony. He doesn't evaluate that testimony in any significant way. The ruling requires that an ALJ consider medications which a claimant is taking or which have been prescribed for him. Mr. Banks had had at least 9 different medications prescribed for his pain in an attempt to relieve his pain, but the ALJ did not discuss that medication. The ALJ is required to consider the past work of a claimant, that if a claimant has a good work history, that bodes well for their credibility. ALJ Gustafson did not discuss the fact that Mr. Banks had a long work history. In addition, the ALJ is required to consider the entire record, including the medical evidence and medical opinions. There are numerous treatment records from Mr. Banks' treating physicians that the ALJ did not discuss. In fact, other than the objective evidence, the 2 MRIs, which established significant impairments in both the cervical and the lumbar spine, the ALJ did not discuss the treating physician's treatment records or opinions at all in this case. There is an opinion by a treating orthopedic surgeon that Mr. Banks suffered from what probably was a significant lesion in his rotator cuff, from a physical medicine doctor, Dr. Harris, that Mr. Banks had problems raising his arm and that he had weakness in his arm. An opinion by a consultative doctor that the Social Security Administration sent the claimant to that he had problems with fine manipulation in his left hand. The ALJ did not discuss that evidence in reaching his credibility determination. I believe this is exactly the kind of credibility determination that this court has previously held to be insufficient and that the ALJ's decision should be reversed on that basis. In addition, in these disability cases, usually the ALJs must reach what they call a residual functional capacity assessment, what the claimant can still do despite their impairment. In this case, the ALJ's functional capacity assessment was insufficient. He indicated that Mr. Banks' impairment, quote, does not exclude him from light and sedentary work, provided that he does not have to perform either activity for extended periods of time, close quote. The ALJ doesn't explain further what he means by the inability to perform lighter sedentary work for extended periods of time. The commissioner, in her brief, concedes that Mr. Banks' past work was at least of light exertional capacity. The magistrate judge found that the job, as described in the Dictionary of Occupational Titles, was of light exertional capacity. If, as the ALJ found, Mr. Banks could not perform light work for an extended period of time, it's difficult, actually it's impossible to tell how then Mr. Banks could perform his past work as a liquor salesman if he couldn't do it for an extended period of time. The ALJ, in reaching his functional capacity assessment, according to Social Security ruling 96-8P, is required to do a function-by-function assessment in determining how much Mr. Banks could lift, how long he could stand, how long he could walk, whether there were problems in bending and reaching, etc. In this case, as just noted, the ALJ did not make any function-by-function assessment. a limitation to being unable to perform light work for an extended period of time could mean that a claimant cannot stand for the 6 hours in an 8-hour workday necessary for light work, or cannot do the lifting necessary for light work, or perhaps is unable to bend sufficiently to do light work. But we have no idea what the specific limitations were that the ALJ here was finding, because he doesn't explain that in his decision. Similarly, the ALJ's analysis of Mr. Banks' past relevant work was insufficient. According to several decisions of this court, Nolan v. Sullivan, Strittmeyer v. Schweiker, Schroeder v. Sullivan, and Prince v. Sullivan, and Social Security ruling 82-62, in analyzing whether a claimant can perform their past relevant work, an ALJ must first list the specific physical requirements of that past work. He must then compare the residual functional capacity to the demands of the past work to determine whether the claimant could perform such past work. Again, the ALJ in Mr. Banks' case did not perform the requisite analysis. He did not state any of the specific requirements of Mr. Banks' past work, other than that he was required to deal with customers and to set up displays. But he did not explain what the physical requirements were for setting up those displays. That's very important because in the commissioner's brief, she indicates that Mr. Banks' past work required that he be on his feet for a majority of the workday. She also indicated that his job required frequent bending and frequent reaching. And there's evidence in this case, in medical opinion, that Mr. Banks is significantly limited in his ability to reach with his left arm, and that he is significantly limited in his ability to bend. In addition, Mr. Banks testified that he can't sit or stand for prolonged periods of time. And the magistrate judge found that the medical evidence showed that he could not sit or stand for prolonged periods of time. So again, it was necessary for the ALJ, therefore, to determine what the specific requirements were of Mr. Banks' past work in order to reach a conclusion as to whether he could continue to perform that work. And finally, in general, the ALJ failed to discuss significant evidence favoring Mr. Banks' claim. In particular, after the hearing, the ALJ sent Mr. Banks to a neurologist for an evaluation. That neurologist provided a functional assessment indicating that Mr. Banks could only stand or walk for 2 or 3 hours in an 8-hour workday for 30 minutes at a time, and had significant limitations in sitting as well as other limitations. The ALJ completely failed to discuss that opinion and that report, the functional assessment of that neurologist, despite the fact that he's the one who sent Mr. Banks for the evaluation. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Mattis.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Mark Mates, and I'm here on behalf of the Commissioner. The Commissioner would contend that, in fact, substantial evidence does support the ALJ's decision. And as a starting point, with regard to the residual functional capacity, the ALJ did indicate that the claimant's RFC was sedentary to light, provided that he did not have to perform either for extended periods. Now, he explicitly referenced at that point the medical expert's testimony at the hearing. And we had a medical expert named Dr. Raimondi, who is a neurologist, who gave a very thorough analysis of the evidence. It went for something like 17 pages of the transcript. She went through and discussed the diagnostic findings. She also considered the medical reports in the record. And she talked at some points, in fact, of some of the complaints that the Mr. Banks related to his physicians.
Well, where is the support for the adverse credibility finding that was made?
Well, the ALJ says that while the claimant had pain, it was not sufficient to preclude him from performing the light or sedentary work. He references at that point not only the daily activities, but the medical evidence. And the medical evidence on the prior page, and he had discussed He summarized the claimant's treatment history. That history not only acknowledged his experience with physical therapy, but also acknowledged his experience with epidurals. Now, there has been some discussion about his medications. At that point, on page 18, there is a reference to the fact that the claimant was taking only Tylenol. And in fact, that comports with his own hearing testimony, because at hearing, Mr. Banks indicated that he was not taking prescription medication at that time and that he was relying on over-the-counter medications. Additionally, we had the limitations here that had been derived by the medical expert at the hearing, which had in part also examined not only the medical findings and the opinions which are in the record, but additionally the subjective allegations which were reported to treating physicians. And nevertheless, Dr. Raimondi concluded that the claimant retained this ability to perform this range of work with an option to stand. Your Honor, he did not, you're correct, I mean, he did not devote a separate paragraph to these factors, but he nevertheless did consider them in his decision. And that consideration is reflected both in his discussion of the evidence and in his reliance upon the medical expert, who also considered these factors as they had been related to the evaluating and treating sources throughout the period. And he does reference, you know, after he talks about the pain being local and not sufficient to exclude that range of work, the fact that, you know, the activities of daily living and the objective medical evidence discussed above supported that conclusion. And with regard to the medical source opinion, virtually all of the treating and evaluating source opinion supported that this claimant could, in fact, return to work. From November of 95, he was released by Dr. Kramer. Beginning in January of 96, Dr. Wetzel at transcript 194 and 270 allowed this claimant to return to work 4 hours a day with a 10-pound lifting restriction. And by February of 96, Dr. Westphal was observing that he had increased his hours, and by April of 96, he was working an 8-hour day. And those findings by these sources are fairly uniform in support of the fact that this claimant retains the ability to engage in work activity, and they were considered by the medical expert in deriving her conclusion. With regard to the hand limitations that have been discussed, I would submit that those the evidence related to that was in 97. The medical expert discussed that evidence, but nevertheless did not ascribe any particular limitations. And Dr. Bialy's report, which is referred to by the claimant in support, Dr. Bialy's specific findings were that this claimant had normal strength in his upper extremities and normal finger grasp and hand grip, and it was only in discussing the claimant's own subjective allegations with regard to buttoning buttons and picking up pencils, in a sense, that he acknowledged that fine motor might be somewhat impaired. The claimant himself testified that his limitations, to the extent he had any, were limited to his left arm, and he was right-handed. And so, given the medical expert's derivation of the RFC finding on which the ALJ explicitly relied, we would submit that was substantially supported. With regard to the past work finding, 8262 says that the starting point is the claimant's own description. And I would point out that while Mr. Banks alleges that the agency has conceded certain aspects, I would remind the court that at that point of the brief, what we're talking about were the demands of his pre-injury work. When we look at the post-injury work, that was described by Mr. Banks. He said he first went back for part-time for the first few weeks. He later returned to full-time at 65 through 66. He explained that he was given accounts involving no lifting. He would check on the accounts and write orders at 71. He acknowledged that, you know, given his initial difficulty, you know, working part-time, his employer told him that he would have to make the effort to come and work full-time, and then he got there, you know, no matter what it took. Now, one of the...
Are there any liquor salesman jobs that require no lifting?
Well, you know, in terms of the lifting requirements, I know the district court made reference to the DOT demands of the job, but in particular here, what the ALJ found was that this person could return to his specific job as performed, the modified work, which Mr. Banks testified he could perform. He performed full-time for a 3 to 4 month period. And when we look at substantial gainful activity, I think that there is at least some inconsistency to some extent when Mr. Banks represents that he became disabled as of January 6, 97, which is what the district court observed at page 2 of its decision. But in addition, he had performed all of this work for the several month period prior to that. The starting point for considering whether something is substantial gainful activity are the earnings. And the earnings here were demonstrative of that level. Furthermore, when the ALJ, you know, when they were getting into the issue of unsuccessful work attempt, as it was raised during the hearing, the claimant's representative at pages 66 and 71, I believe, of the transcript, represented that he was going to come forward with specific evidence with regard to pay stubs, you know, and the time period at which he was working. And so it's clearly on notice that the ALJ was concerned with the parameters here of Mr. Banks' actual modified work. The fact that Mr. Bank got there no matter what it took because of he was on notice from his employer reinforced that his employer here did not make an accommodation for him. And the job ended at this point due to a layoff in which he and 11 others were laid off. This court has examined the issue of past work, which is performed for a several-month period, and has examined whether that work was in fact makeshift or temporary. And there's no indication on this record that his modified job was either. While he went back and he was able to work at it without lifting, that appeared to be a job that he, you know, certainly was performing within that period for his employer. His employer certainly was willing to allow that. The job ended here only with regard to this layoff, but there was no indication, you know, in terms of any other that it was more than just for business purposes. So the agency would in fact admit that there is sufficient evidence here both to see the credibility finding, that there was sufficient evidence with regard to the RFC, and that there was sufficient evidence to substantiate the past work finding to the modified work. Thank you, Your Honor.
2 minutes, Mr. Schultz.
Mr. Banks testified that he never performed that modified work satisfactorily. And when he went back to work, he received unsatisfactory evaluations, that he couldn't meet his sales quota, and that he would have to sit in his car with the seat reclined either before he visited a customer or after he visited a customer just so he could get up and walk again. So he really never performed that job in the way it was supposed to be performed. And yes, the counsel for the attorney at the administrative hearing indicated that he would attempt to get, or that she would attempt to get information, I believe it was concerning the job, not concerning whether jobs existed, liquor sales jobs existed with no listing, but information concerning when Mr. Banks actually worked. I think that's all that she said she would get. What she obtained was a letter indicating the last day of work, which was January 6, 1997. Okay, you're welcome. Also, because the alleged onset date was in January of 1997, and as Commissioner's counsel just indicated, the evidence concerning the problems Mr. Banks had with his left hand and his left arm were in 1997, after his alleged onset date. So even if he could have properly performed his job prior to January of 97, in June and July of 97 and later, we have evidence that Mr. Banks could not use his left hand for reaching or for manipulation, which was required on his job of the liquor salesman. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The case will be taken under advisement.